I'm Silvahara Pettyon. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms. Catch it on KIRN 670 AM or 95.5 HD3 FM. Hey everybody, I'm Silvahara Pettyon. For those of you who don't know me, I have spent most of my career in newsrooms across the country. And just like you now, I am at home, staying at home with the crisis that's happening around the world. Being at home and talking to my family and friends and my colleagues, it really became obvious for me that we need to have a bigger conversation about the impact that this crisis is having on us personally, professionally, and as a community. There are so many layers to this. There are so many unintended consequences to what's happening that I think if we don't talk about it, people will sort of get lost in the shuffle of really what's happening. And one of the things that really came up for me is being an immigrant, a refugee, a survivor of war, and having seen revolution and having lived in those circumstances, and also within a community that it feels very close to that experience, the conversations and the impact is very different for those communities. And when you think about it, there is a lot of pockets around, not just around the country in the United States, but around the world of people who have fled conflict in order to find peace and safety in other countries and are now finding themselves in this circumstance, which is causing a whole other slew of issues and triggers for them that they don't even understand and recognize. And this conversation leads me to introduce my guest, my first and foremost, my cousin. She's my first cousin, Adriana Karapetian, and friends, and of course, an incredible psychotherapist who works with people who experience and come from conflict and trauma. And my conversations with her about this crisis led me to decide to actually do these interviews and do these segments, because I think her knowledge in this space and how she works with people and what we need in general as far as our communities is concerned while we figure out how to get through this is extremely important. Thank you for taking the time and joining us today and allowing us to pick your brain and better understand how to cope with what's going on.
Thank you for having me, Silva. Thank you.
And I should tell you all, she is in Australia. So I think the time difference is what, like 18 hours?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. And she has been extremely busy in the last week or so, maybe even longer, as this pandemic has grown, as it has moved from country to country, as it has led to countries and communities to shut down and order stay home orders and shelter in place orders. And obviously, I know you can't talk about your clients specifically and particularly, but can you tell me a little bit about some of the things that are coming up and some of the things that you've been dealing with? And I know that you've been working ridiculous hours trying to help people through this crisis.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some information and insight and some experience with people around the world. This is a very, very difficult time for everyone. It is unprecedented, and the difficulty has many, many layers and has different impacts on different individuals. Now, one of the reasons why this is a very difficult time is that we don't know when it's going to end, and we don't know how it's going to end, and we don't know what the future holds. This causes a lot of anxiety and triggers in a lot of people. In general, this would be an anxiety that normally some people would manage quite well. But I want to specify and concentrate on individuals who are specifically more vulnerable. And I can mention those that have experienced some transgenerational trauma in their lives without often knowing that they have and without knowing that it's very, very present in their life. And this transgenerational trauma that I'm talking about, obviously, what's close to my heart is trauma related to refugee and war. However, the transgenerational trauma that I'm talking about comes in different forms and comes in different images, and it comes in different experiences. You may not be a refugee, you may not have experienced war, but you may have experienced transgenerational trauma. And the transgenerational trauma comes in formats such as domestic violence, because there are very much families and individuals who have experienced domestic violence and
or have grown up in that atmosphere and not necessarily experienced it personally in their own life of being a victim of it. I think we need to clarify when you talk about transgenerational trauma, right? You could have just been present when it's happening, and that the impact of that is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So the Syrian Armenians, or Armenians in Turkey, or Armenians in Lebanon, some of these individuals have not seen the genocide themselves. They could be people your age, my age, yeah?
Right.
But they have grown up in the laps of their grandparents, who were the first generation, who were the people who have experienced the trauma, the genocide. They have escaped the genocide. They have escaped to Lebanon, Turkey, Syria, and they have told and retold the stories in songs and in stories and in various formats to these individuals who are now in their 40s and 50s and 60s. These people have not seen the genocide with their own eyes, but they have lived it. They have relived it. And when you listen to a traumatic story, especially more than once, again and again, you actually live it. And you may not be aware of it, but it's sitting there in your unconscious. And all it takes is something like this, and that becomes awake, like a lion in you. The biggest thing that you see in these individuals is fear, okay? The fear. Often they don't know fear towards what, but they are full of fear. They're fearful to leave their house. They're fearful to leave their suburbs. They're fearful of anything. We don't know when it's going to finish, how it's going to finish, what the impact is going to be. It re-triggers and awakens this transgenerational trauma in these individuals.
This transgenerational trauma, obviously what is really close to us personally is we are of Armenian descent. So the genocide is something that we have grown up listening to stories. We've heard it from survivors. We've heard it from children of survivors. We've been taught and lived and relived it over and over again. And there is a purpose for that, obviously, is to make sure that we don't forget where we come from. And there's another layer of that. A lot of us, people our age, actually fled our countries of origin because of unrest or war or some kind of conflict. And to add to that, when we talk about transgenerational trauma, it could simply be any community that has lived through any kind of conflict of injustice. So, we know Holocaust survivors are perfect examples of people who are subconsciously live through this transgenerational trauma. Where I just want to extend this idea of what transgenerational trauma is, and it's not just, we're not just talking about Armenians and Armenian genocide and refugees who fled countries, but if you've lived in any kind of conflict zone, it could be the neighborhood that you grew up in and you had to dodge the bullets that flew around in your neighborhood. That is in itself trauma too. There's so many things that could fit within transgenerational trauma that so many of us are not aware and not, it's not something that we think about in our daily lives, but the impact of something like this and how it triggers so many different things with the world coming to a complete stop and are the things that you use to keep ourselves distracted and busy just stopping. I mean, this has got to be a complete nightmare for people who are on far spectrum of that trauma, right?
Yes, absolutely. And transgenerational trauma, as you explained, it doesn't have to be in the context of war. It can be in the context of domestic violence. It can be in the context of sexual abuse. It can be in the context of extreme poverty. It doesn't have to be people who change countries. You could have lived in that country, in America, in Australia, in Europe, but have experienced these transgenerational traumas. Mm. So we need to be mindful that this is a cohort of population that are extremely, extremely vulnerable and may very easily fall through the cracks. And this is a time that we need to stop and be aware of what's going on and what's happening with us, and be aware and be mindful if we are being triggered in these instances.
How do we do that? We hear people talk about this all the time. I've seen it on social media, but it's one thing to hear about it. It's another to really stop and really evaluate. How do we know if we're being triggered by something like a transgenerational trauma that is not at the forefront of our thoughts?
Yeah. Look, it's a very important question, but a very complicated question. But in some ways, we can simplify it. If you feel that you are not functioning on the same level as you did 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, that means something is going on. That means you need to ask for help. Now, if you're sleeping more, if you're not sleeping at all, if you are crying more, if you are detached from people, if you are arguing with everyone, if you are having fights with everyone in your family, if there's something impacting your functionality and it's impacting people around you, that means there's something going on, something being triggered in you which you're not aware of.
But a lot of people would say, well, it's obvious that those things would happen because our lives have come to a stop. We're all stressed because we don't know if we're going to have our jobs. We're all stressed because we can't see our friends or our family members. Those things are the anxieties are a natural state of, you know, a state of anxiousness that we all feel because of those obvious things that worry us. How do we know the difference between the two?
Okay, when it's impacting, when your behavior is impacting others, okay? So if you're living with a household and you can't sleep and your insomnia is impacting your partner and your children and you can't cook and there's no food around the house and your family is saying, why haven't you cooked? So you keep pacing up and down the corridor, or you're crying constantly. So these are not normal. That means you need help. You need to reach out. But you need to remember that these are very, very normal reactions. Like, you can't say, oh, if this is happening to me, then I'm having a nervous breakdown, or I have a diagnosed anxiety disorder or depressive disorder. So I think it's very important to be firstly kind to yourself, kind to others, and just take a time to sit down and talk and not push people away from you. I think that's the most important advice that I could give to anyone at this point.
Yeah, I mean, what are some of the things that you've been listening to? Particularly, I want to make sure that this conversation is broad enough that it allows people to see themselves in the conversation and have some takeaway so that they can implement some things. Part of the reason I really wanted to talk to you is because of the thesis that you wrote, right? What was the name of the thesis?
Where's My Home?
Where is My Home? So part of the reason I wanted to talk to you, because there are so many people in the world that are living in a place that is not their home. And there are so many people who are living in a place where they probably will never feel like home. But it's where they've ended up because they've found security and safety for themselves, right? And I thought, because you wrote that thesis in dissecting the impact of what happens when you don't have that security and safety of a home, and then you seek shelter and safety in another country that's supposed to be where you find peace, and something like this happens, and you are literally reliving and re-experiencing everything that you just left behind. And obviously, this is extremely personal for me, and I know you lived through the war as well. When you grow up in those circumstances and being as aware and as conscious and as open-minded as I am and seeking help and therapy, I cannot imagine what the older generation is going through as we are trying to find our way through this.
Look, looking at my father has experienced involuntary displacement 3 times in his life.
Yeah.
Okay? Not just twice, 3 times. Once when he was 9 years old and he had to move from villages to Tehran, to big city. And then once he was 45, and involuntary displacement again from Iran to Australia. Looking at my father, as long as he knows that the children, his children are safe and his grandchildren are safe and his siblings are safe, the children are safe, he's happy. So it's important to remember and take away this note, very important message, that in fact, some of the refugee families or displaced families or people who have experienced this are much, much resilient, much more resilient than the average population. So if you have a whole village of people who experience bombing and war, not everyone's going to develop PTSD. Not everyone's going to need extra support and extra help. There are some, this is a small percentage of population who will. But what happens to the rest? Which is what we don't often mention, which we don't often talk about, which is very, very important. What happens?
Yeah, I think we're resilient, and we have the skills and the tools that we have built to cope with that, but that still doesn't change the fact that something like this no one is prepared for, and no one would have thought about, triggers a lot of emotional instability in a lot of people. And a lot of these cultures aren't exactly, we're not exactly open-minded when it comes to therapy and getting help and mental health. So I want to create an opportunity for them to listen to some of the stuff and say it's okay if you're feeling some type of way, whether it's anxiety, whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, whatever it is, or if it's bringing up all of these emotions from the past, it's normal. It's part of the process, and how to cope with it and what to do about it.
Look, I think I have been extremely busy. All my colleagues have been extremely busy. People need us more than before. So one thing that helps is that they realize that we're all in this together. Whether you're a therapist, whether you are a migrant, whether you were born in this country, that country, we're all in this together. So this gives some kind of peace to know, in this inner peace, to know that, oh, so Adriana doesn't have advantage over me because she's educated, or she's got, citizenship, or that person has got, this and that. So we're all in this together. So that gives some kind of inner peace. But I think at these times, if you need help, you need to speak out, speak to your GP, speak to your counselor, speak to someone, your neighbor, give them a call. But often enough, people who have gone through this in the war, they have developed a lot of resistance and toughness that helped them. So, in fact, some people say, oh, at least it's not bombs being dropped on my head. I can avoid it by not going out.
It's so funny you said that, because mom said completely something the opposite the other day. She was in the kitchen cooking, and I know that we're like having a personal conversation over here about my mom, but she said, at least when we were in that circumstance, it was somewhat better because we knew when it was coming. We knew it's like identifying the enemy of and the thing that creates anxiety is a lot easier to handle and manage than the unknown of this thing that is this that's floating around that has no end, no identification, no timetable, no zone. So it's all in, I guess, how you look at it from a perspective standpoint and context. But her perception was, you know, this is harder because we knew at a certain time, at a certain way, when the bombs were coming, and we took shelter and we prayed that it wasn't going to land on top of us, but it wasn't 24 hours a day. You see what I'm saying? Even though they don't realize the impact and the consequence of that was living in trauma 24 hours a day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And some of the other things I've experienced from, you know, people that I have worked with or I see now is they have so much insecurity that they think, oh, what if this virus wipes out all our identity and we don't know if we are allowed to stay in this country and we're sent back to our home country. So there's an anxiety on every level. I don't think I see individuals experiencing anxiety around food or medication or water, but more around what if they end up going back to their country, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Syria, you know, where it is. So it is my personal opinion that I think we're going to see a lot of people with anxiety and eventually down the track with depression.
You're listening to this.